This episode of The Real Dirt is sponsored by CannaCraft, leading the way in cannabis science in California. CannaCraft.
All right, Real Dirt, Chip Baker and Justin Jones. Fire it up, Justin.
All right, firing it up, Chip. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a stony one today. Justin is one of the original Denver cannabis dispensaries. He started in 2009. He's pioneered so much of the industry from vertically integration, packaging, consulting, legal, political. He's definitely an old schooler, and I'm stoked to have you here, Justin.
Thanks, Chip. Stoked to be here.
Yeah, what are we smoking here, man?
We are smoking some biodiesel from Dank. It's got a pretty good potency profile, 20 to 25% and almost 26%. Here in Colorado, we get to
THC.
Yeah, we get to potency profile our stuff, and then we are able to, what's the word I'm looking for?
Just that one hit made you stumble your words.
I know. Oh, we're able to process validate our potencies. So basically, we take and we test the same strain over and over over a certain amount of time. And then we can show that range of low to high. And then you have to retest every 6 months. And so that's a process validation tool that they allow us to do in Colorado.
They require all of the cannabis to be tested correctly, randomly tested.
Not necessarily randomly. You have to test it.
Okay, but you have to submit a test of all of your crops, right? All your batches.
At first.
And then on your labeling, which is a slightly different thing, it's a test that you do. And then you have an average of all your tests, and you get to put that high and low on your label.
Exactly. So the rules say that when you test a certain strain, so this is BioChem that we're smoking. So you test BioChem 6 times over 12 weeks, and the tests have to be from different harvest batches, and they have to be like 2 weeks apart. So they want you to really test the plant, that strain,
right,
you know, from
a different
bunch of rooms, a bunch of different times. And then you can show that range, and then you can retest every 6 months. You can test as much as you want. That's the minimum requirement.
Variation? Are you surprised at any of the variation you see?
I'm not necessarily surprised. I just think that there are variations, especially between the different types of the plant or the different parts of the plant. So there's variations between, you know, the top and the bottom or the left and the right. You know, to truly get an idea of what a plant's potency is, you would homogenize the samples and take a big sample. So back in December of 2015.
Grind up a bunch of different nuggets,
right,
mix them together.
So we participated in the first ever profile test that they gave. It was a proficiency test. And so the Colorado Department of Health wanted to test the 16 labs that are in Colorado that are licensed to test cannabis. So the state officials, the Marijuana Enforcement Division, came to Dank and purchased 3 ounces of marijuana with cash. Which is pretty cool. pretty cool to have the government buy weed from you.
Yeah, a requisition for cannabis, please.
And that's really what they had to do. And they were waiting. Yeah, they were waiting to get the money. They were waiting, to get the you know, they had to go through all their things. What they did was they bought 3 ounces. They were 3 separate ounces, different strains. They took those 3 ounces, they homogenized it, and then they sent what should be the same exact sample to all 16 labs. Of course, all 16 labs should come out with the exact same results, right?
Of course. This has been one of the major complaints with other people we've had on the show, is that the testing's not consistent, it's not accurate.
Nope, it's not.
It's geared for higher THC contents or higher CBD contents instead of actuality.
And, you know, the first question that the enforcement agency had asked me was, do you know which labs get higher test results than other labs? And I said, of course I do. And he was... we were kind of off the record talking about it. And I said, well, if you're trying to sell something and you know that if you send it to this place, it'll look pretty good. But if you send it to this other place, it'll look great. Which one are you going to send it to? So, yes. And, you know, the results came back and they were published. And, you know, most of the labs were in the middle of the bullseye, if you look at it as a target. And, you know, most of the labs were inside that inner circle. So the variances were not that far. And then you had outliers. There was about another half a dozen outliers that were, you know, pretty far off.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we have to look at is that in this arena of testing, of pharmaceutical, whether you want to look at pharmaceuticals or testing or any of these other things, nothing is an exact science. When you take a Bayer aspirin that says it's 325 milligrams, that's plus or minus 20%. So that could be 380 milligrams. It could be, you know, 290.
Right.
Yeah, so sure. That's a medical community thing. I mean, that's like, that's a major pharmaceutical company like Bayer, and they've got that much leeway, you know, so. Mm-hmm.
Same in the fertilizer industry. The NPK numbers are minimums.
Right. And, you know, we've seen finally in edible production in Colorado, they came off of the 100 milligrams, and they give you a plus 10% or even mm-hmm. more, 15%, I think.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Because for a while there, everybody was scared to try to dose their edibles right at 100 milligrams, because if you hit at 101, you had to start over.
Sure. So 80.
You know, now everybody wants to shoot a little high, you know, so their stuff's nice mm-hmm. and strong. They want to be at 105, you know, or 108 right. on their 100 milligram edible. And they're still going to show it as 100 milligrams. Mm-hmm. And the customer's still going to think it's 100. But anyways, yeah. So
yeah, man, let's do the who, what, when, man.
I'm Justin Jones, and in August of 2009, I drove around Northeast Denver looking at warehouses. And back then, this district was 70% vacant. Everybody had moved down the road to a newer, bigger, better warehouse. You know, these warehouses, this was the first industrial park in Denver. So there was, you know, there was just all these empty old buildings. We called the number on the front of the building. The guy answered. This was on a Sunday afternoon. And we said, we've got medical marijuana cards, and we want to rent the space and we want to grow some weed, and it's legal. And, you know, we're also musicians, and we want to, you know, bring our recording studio equipment in here and maybe have some rehearsal space. And because
you musicians, you always want to like double down with your studio space.
Totally, totally. And so we were looking at it as, you know, like, let's have our jam pad, a band hang, and grow our plants in the corner, right? And it was really just going to be for ourselves. We weren't like trying to start a grow. We weren't trying to start a store. We just rented some commercial space. So by November of 2009, 2 months after we move in, the governor declares that if you're selling marijuana, you got to get a sales tax license. That it's not like pharmaceutical pills. It's not like your pills that are exempt. You know, like it's like, no, this isn't RX. It's not a prescription. You got to charge. And, you know, we had, because of the Ogden memo, and then, you know, what later became, you know, turned into the Cole memo, we were starting to grow for some other people. So we really never got the man hang. We never got the jam pad. It just, you know, we kept stacking cards. And so by December, we had our sales tax license. And then by January of 2010, the city of Denver came out and said, hey, listen, if you're selling pot to more than six people, you got to get our dispensary license. So, you know, shortly after that, the state of Colorado put together the MMED, Medical Marijuana Enforcement Division, and came up with the state rules. By the summer of 2010, we were applying for the state license. So things moved fast in less than a year. And really, the golden ticket was having the warehouse, having an address. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I work in other states.
Zoning hadn't even come up at that point.
No, there was no zoning. We couldn't get business licenses. We were really just stacking cards, just like still happening in a lot of places. But the key was the address. The key was the industrial property, you know. We also were kind of allowed some grandfathering, which is kind of a slang term for being able to operate with the rules that used to be for your area, even though they changed them.
When did all that change? What was the?
Well, the zoning over there changed in 2011, and my building went from an industrial property with no restrictions. So back then they'd called it an I-0. Which meant
right.
you could do whatever
whatever
you
wanted.
They did not care.
You
but
can
in the,
do whatever
you, know,
you want.
Yeah. But in efforts to modernize the city of Denver, all those codes were written in like the 50s. So they're like, look, we need to update these areas, and we want this area to be able to build.
One of the smartest things Denver did,
yeah,
actually,
it
in
is.
The cannabis industry was push people into those unused areas.
For sure. And now they want them back, actually. But that's a whole nother discussion. So we became an industrial mixed-use space, which you can no longer grow cannabis in. So we have a grandfathering there. So we are allowed to grow cannabis there. Now, if I sold my company to you, you could grow cannabis there. But if I closed my company down Nobody just walked away. No one else will ever grow weed in that building again.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I've heard of this.
The store is okay there. I mean, we can have a store there forever. There's no, you know, restrictions on the store side of things. So
it is an industrial area. There are homes not too far away.
Well, that's what happened. The city just did a 1,000-foot setback off of all residential areas.
Right, and you're not a 1,000.
And we're one building over.
Yeah, okay,
which turns out to be amazing for the store and for the people to get over and buy product. But at the end of the day, you know, maybe the smell of weed going right over to the neighbor's backyards isn't that cool. But we've never had a problem in our neighborhood. I think that most of the houses in our neighborhood are growing weed at their houses too. So I don't really think anybody cares.
So many people grow cannabis here in Colorado and in Denver. Because you can.
Because it's legal.
Man, let me stop you right there. And now I want to tell your story.
Yeah.
Right. Because you told it.
Well, that was the beginning.
That was the beginning. I'm gonna tell the listeners how it really happened.
Okay.
Because I was there.
You were. I did. There. My favorite. The only store I've ever bought nutrients at was Cultivate Colorado. So.
Oh, thank you. Well, Justin and Greg walk in one day, and they say, "I want a grow tent."
Yeah.
They buy this grow tent, and then they come back and they're like, "Hey, I'm gonna get another grow tent." And, you know, my staff, we're really encouraging. We help the customers out. You know, they say, "Well, hey, what do you think about building the grow room?" He's like, "No, I need a grow tent."
Yeah.
Right. And their model, I'm not quite sure what their model was, but they kept buying these grow tents. Every month they'd buy another one light grow tent.
Yeah.
Right. Until they literally got up to like 5 or 6. And I'm like, what are these guys doing? They're definitely going to fail. There's no way they're going to fucking make it buying grow tents.
Yeah.
And they got 10 grow tents. And I'm like, holy shit, what are they doing here? They got, what's their reasoning? Because you guys seem like smart guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But a grow tent is usually for, not for commercial use.
Nope.
But by the time we talked, you guys had 20 maybe.
I think we finally built a room, you know, like, so I think we got up to, let me think back. I think we got up to about a dozen, and we said, you know, why are we buying all these fucking tents? And so we built a room. We built like an 8-light room. You know, soon after that, the city came around, and, you know, we kind of got in trouble for building some electricity stuff without permits, but and things like that. And you know, that was just a small fine and get some permits and, you know.
And at this point, I definitely didn't think you guys were going
to
make it.
Right. And right. So, you know, like now we're having, so now we had to go to court and, you know, explain why we had this grow there and all this electrical.
Mm-hmm.
It was called an illegal electrical upgrade or something. Right. And they're misdemeanor charges. It's pretty, mm-hmm. it's actually a criminal misdemeanor charge. We got it all thrown out and we fixed everything. So it was all good. But the tents wouldn't work because they weren't a physical permanent structure.
Right. But at the time, there was a rationale on the patients or the cards or something,
right?
It
wasn't even, you know, it was just that we were trying to add fast. And so, you know, like for, you know, like $1,000, I could pop another tray and another 9 plants and, right, you know, another 1,000 watts and
flowered at any cycle you want.
Right. And so when we built that first room, you know, we finally had like saved up, you know, $5,000 or something, you know. Right.
You had 12 tents going, man.
Yeah. Well,
did you do well in any of those tents or?
You know, we always got like a pound of light. It paid the bill. It allowed everything that, you know, was happening to continue to happen. You know, of course, back then we were getting like $3,500 a pound, you know, and that was just even on wholesale.
Right.
As we got our store open, we started getting more than that a pound because we were vertically integrated, you know, and that's something that I know we're going to talk about today. But yeah, you know, eventually we, you know, had to do a full, get hire an engineer and build it all out. So we were actually one of the first groups in cannabis in Colorado and in Denver to get a certificate of occupancy, a CO. And so we were one of the first marijuana companies. And so a lot of what we went through was the city not knowing how to deal with marijuana guys. And we were the first ones. So we kind of were the guinea pigs all the time. We always ended up being the guinea pigs. Well, I have
you guys also don't fit the stereotypical cannabis grower bill.
Right.
Other than you're both musicians.
Yes, that is.
That's another story.
But we were regular day job guys, you know. I was a professional salesperson. I was going out, you know, dressing nice and visiting lots of different clients. And my partner, Greg, was owned a landscaping company and was, you know, selling and business development. And, you know, so yeah, we were regular guys, you know, We're from the Midwest. We're laid back kind of people. So,
that
you know, it
cannabis.
Went well.
Had you guys grown it before?
Just at home a little bit, you know? So, yeah, I mean, right. I started growing cannabis. I was growing cannabis for a year before 09 when we mm-hmm. moved into that warehouse. So, you know, at this point, 8 years ago, you know, right. 8 years I've been growing.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. You guys are perfect blend.
Yeah.
Right time, right place, good background.
Totally.
I mean, you know, Greg with his landscaping background and you with your sales background. Yep. Both of you guys are like politically oriented. Maybe you shouldn't say politically oriented, but you know how to network.
Oh, yeah. Right? Definitely. We know how to network. Well, you just know when you have something. And, you know, we sat back and we were like, look, we're not necessarily the best of any of this, but we have a lease on this warehouse. Our mm-hmm. landlord's cool. And we're already ahead of most of the people that started jumping in the game. Because, you know, fall of 09, Ogden memo, floodgates are open. We know the feds are not going to bust us if we're stacking cards and not doing anything too crazy, right? So everybody wanted warehouse space. That was the ticket. You know, we just kind of looked at everything like, oh, we got to get this license. Well, it's $3,000. Oh, that's a pound of weed. Good. Nope, we can do that. We can grow a pound of weed and it'll pay for this license. Same with the state licensing, and everyone at the MED was new, and they were all former police officers, and now they are in charge of the Marijuana Enforcement Division, you know. And so I'll never forget the very first day that I went in for our face-to-face interviews and got to meet, you know, my investigator, and we were his very first interview. So I was his first person that he ever interviewed who's going to be a licensee for cannabis. Now, that guy ended up becoming the director of the Marijuana Enforcement Division for Colorado and has now moved his way up into the executive level at the Department of Revenue and oversees the director of marijuana. And, you know, that's been pretty cool because, you know, he's watched us go all these years and we were the first ones he ever talked to about it. And we've watched him, you know, work his way all the way up through the ranks at the state level, and it's been pretty cool. So, you know, it's really important that everybody understands that you don't have to have 20 years of growing, and you don't have to be, you know, a second or third generation grower right now.
Enthusiasm, determination, and cash.
Cash. And then the other one that trumps all of that is the ability to be compliant and follow rules and regulations that have never happened with people right. in this industry before. And so,
be able to like ride the wave, because that's what's going on too. It's constantly changing. Yep. You have to ride the wave of regulations.
Ride the wave of regulations. And also, Colorado was the first ones to regulate. So, you mm-hmm. know, I catch myself now that I'm working in Oregon and Washington a lot, you know, talking about Colorado, and I always kind of preface these guys of like, hey, you know, tell me if you're sick of hearing Colorado this or Colorado that. I tell them, but at the end of the day, these guys still haven't even been hardly regulated. In Oregon, the growers have never been regulated until right now. And so, you know, I have been regulated for 6 years by multiple government agencies. And so there's just a big learning curve when you have that much of a difference between zero regulation and then someone like me who maybe has only been growing 8 years, but I've been regulated for 6 years of that. And, you know, that's a big hurdle as California comes online, because, you know, California's had patchwork at best local, you know, ordinances. And
it's a gray market free for all.
Yep, it is. And Oregon's been a gray market free for all. And in Colorado still is. It's just the license system where people are going to the stores to buy cannabis are really not participating in that side of things. But mm-hmm. we all know plenty of people that have their garages and their basements and, you know, that sort of thing. So it's still a little bit Wild West.
Millions of points of light, man. Millions of points of light. Well, hey, man, I hear that music. I think that's time we should take a break. Let's take a break.
All right, let's take a
Chip
break.
Chip Baker.
Justin Jones.
Real Dirt. Real Dirt, Chip Baker, Justin Jones. Had to get a little more shot of caffeine here. Let me have a sip.
It helps balance out the puffing.
Yeah, no, we should smoke some more weed. I got some weed over here. What are you interested in?
What do you got?
Man, I had awesome guest the other day, Mr. Soul from Brothers Grimm Seeds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He brought over some weed. I got some of his C99.
Let's try a little of that Cinderella.
Yeah, dude. Here, he apologizes for the trim, but I'll let you look at it.
Well, you know. Right. Sometimes guys don't trim with that. I see that in Oregon a lot.
It's definitely an old school technique.
Well,
man.
And it protects the crystals and stuff. So if you don't mind kind of just flaking it off, especially here in Colorado, it's so dry. Usually that stuff just, by the time you're packing a bowl, it pops off anyways, right?
Yeah, and if you're selling it like this, there must be, 5% leaf on it or something. So, you know,
yeah, you might,
5% is 5%, right?
I've never heard of anyone doing it for that reason, but I'm sure it's been done.
I don't know. I mean, if you can get away with it, whatever, right?
Yeah. But when you're also, sometimes when you're getting somebody's head stash and they don't care, you know, they're just, it is what it is.
Yeah, and that was Mr. Soul's explanation is, hey, man, when it's for myself, I just do it this way. If it's going on the shelf, then they trim it. Right. He gave me some Genius Nuggets that were trimmed.
Yeah.
Do you know that weed, Genius?
Mm-mm.
Fuck, dude. That's some bomb ass weed. It blows this other stuff away.
Yeah,
everybody says they have it, but they just have some cross of it.
My favorite pot up in Oregon now is that I've been digging on is the Archive Boys. Archive
Fletcher.
Portland.
Yeah.
So Mac and Fletcher and those guys, they're onto something. And what's super cool there is that I can go in there.
Yeah, dank weed. They're onto super dank weed.
Yeah, man. I can go in there and get super dank weed. But if you like it a lot, they have the seeds and the clones.
Mm-hmm. For one-stop shop.
Yeah. So
what's the name of their place?
Archive Portland.
Archive Portland.
Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, they've got a good name from all the work they've done in Washington and but those guys got some good strains, man. They've got this Gorilla Glue that's and they're really good growers too. So I mean, that's a big part of any strain or any how good the weed is, you know, growing it, who's giving it the love.
I think I met Fletcher probably when he might not even been out of high school yet, but he was, you know, lying about his age to hang out with this group of growers at this Cannabis Cup,
yeah,
right back in 2004, maybe.
Yeah.
Right. So that'd been 12 years ago. Yeah. 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 Check it out. So that was 12 years ago.
Right.
And I know he's 30 right now. So I think he was just out of high school or almost.
Yeah.
But he's always been really mature and had super incredible cannabis.
He is well known in all parts of the country for being an amazing grower and also the genetics, the strains.
I know. I need to get him over here on the show, dude.
Let's talk about 2010.
Yeah, so let's explain what's going on here. So right now, in 2009 to 2010, you guys are under the medical guise. You're growing cannabis. Maybe under the medical rules.
Well, they had been started, really, and we had applied for licensing.
It was all just infancy before regulation.
Well, the initial regulations,
it was all just starting. We'll just say that.
Yep. It was HB 10. Okay, I can't remember the House bill. I won't even try to call it. But, you know, it basically gave us the guidelines to work within, and it created the agency at the state level, the MMED.
The Marijuana Enforcement Division.
Yep, that's what it's called now. Back then it was Medical Marijuana Enforcement Division. So they once recreational hit, they dropped the medical and just called it MED. Law Enforcement Agency was created from scratch under the Department of Revenue and was mostly staffed by guys that had been working in gaming area or just other officers, law officers.
Let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
This is, you know, the real dirt. We're trying to get to the bottom of things.
Yeah.
I want to know how it felt as a transitional, cannabis is illegal and you go to jail for it, to you talking to someone with a badge about your cannabis. Like when that moment happened, tell me what went through your head, that first interaction with law enforcement and legal cannabis.
It was amazing. We couldn't believe it was happening. It was like living a dream on a daily basis. On the other side of things is these guys, even though they were cops, they seemed pretty cool and pretty into it. And you know, I still know a lot of those guys from the early days, like we talked about earlier. I still know the government guys a lot. I do a lot of work with them, and we've been kind of Dank has been a place for the government guys, for the MED to come and feel safe in working through what they got to work through to be good and better for the industry. So
you guys have been pioneers.
Yeah, we really just, and it was just because we were so scared that we were going to do something wrong, get busted, get thrown in jail, whatever.
Always we figured some of the most conservative.
Yeah, we just tried to toe the line and be cool and have respect, and it all worked out because, you know, here we are 7 years later, 6 years after I applied for that state license, and nobody's in jail, and everybody's working hard. You know, we've grown from all those tents back in the day to about 25 employees. And we went recreational, and that was a major effort. Once recreational passed, yep, Amendment 64 passed in November of 2012, and we spent all of 2013 putting the regulations together and the licensing together. Dank went in on October 1st, 2013, and made our application for recreational cannabis. That was the very first day that you could make the application. And we went down later that afternoon from the state to the city of Denver and we're sat down at the desks. Sean Phillips from Strainwise was at one desk and Greg and I were at the other desk applying for our city license, first city license for recreational. And that was, you know, news cameras and the whole nine yards. But that allowed us to be open for business on January 1st, 2014, which was the first day that recreational cannabis was allowed to be sold legally on this planet.
I was there. I broke my way in line.
You did. We got right. Chip up in line. We had about 2,000 people in line that day. Totally. It wrapped around the block. It was pretty crazy. It was a monumentous day, and there were only 17 right. stores in the state of Colorado that were open. So, I mean, there was, you know, I claim, and I still will hold true to this, that we actually made the very first sale of recreational cannabis to end Prohibition. But there's 17 other guys too. But anyways, it was a great day. You were there, and you know, it really launched my career. What we had been before was a small medical marijuana company, mom and pop. It was me working 60 hours a week with a few three employees.
How much weed did you guys sling that day?
Oh, that day we sang a lot of weed on the first day of rec.
Did you only sell eighths or grams? Or
yeah, that's all we've ever sold. We kind of really saw the.
So you're growing pounds and selling grams.
We are the dime bag guy.
Bam.
Yeah, it really
Justin's
really works.
Got a corner.
Yes, we corner. Have the corner. And damn. When you're growing it too, you know, and you are vertically integrated that way.
So what did you pull up in? Was that a Lambo or Bugatti?
I'm driving the. I'm driving a police interceptor today, 2007, which is our security car for the grow. Well, I moved to Portland back in April, so 5 months now coming up. So when I come back to Denver, I get a rent cars or drive the interceptor.
Right. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, you pulled up in a cop car today.
Yeah.
Great.
Yes. Well, you know,
you got a badge, man. I mean, you're not a cop, but you know,
the cops that I showed the car to you that I know yesterday thought it was pretty funny that I was driving around in a cop car. But
we used to drive one and we'd always get blinks from other cars. Hysterical.
So so rec happened 2014. You were there and
yeah, bribed my way in the line with stickers.
Yep. And
there was going to be a revolt.
Well, you know, Chip, we've always purchased all our supplies from Cultivate and that goes back before 2009 when I was growing at home. That goes back to like, well, whenever yeah, you first you were, put that store yeah. in over on Wadsworth.
That was 08, yeah.
Yep, so.
Yeah, 08. Oh, yeah, you were one of my first customers.
Yeah, we were there. Sure. Like, I knew right away because that's when I had started.
So, yeah, I did not think Justin was going to survive, and now he is thriving. He has Dank, Kush Bottles, Denver Consulting Group, Canastore, Green Space RE. I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 incredible businesses. Yeah, basically since, you know, 2009, since
yeah,
those years,
since 2009.
That one light, that one grow tent.
What's really cool about cannabis right now is that you could do something that is what makes our country great and it's what makes capitalism great and it's why America's better than all the other countries out there, okay? But it's hard to do that anymore. It's hard to just, like, work your ass off and throw down a little bit of money and, like, you know, have it really kind of be a lottery, you know, like win a lottery kind of situation out of it. And I know you come from that background of putting your bootstraps all together to make things happen. And that's, you know, what we really had done. And once recreational happened, the fruits of the labor really, you know, were in front of us, and we had them, and we were really excited. And it was very tough because our company went from 4 employees to 30 overnight, literally overnight. So the rapid growth, there was stress. It's positive stress, but stress is still stress, and you have to be able to change. And so, you know, we went through a lot of changes in the beginning of 2014. But you know, we were selling a lot of marijuana. We had tons of customers. It was good times, and that's when Kush Bottles became a part of our portfolio, and that was again due to getting the warehouse next door to the grow. We weren't able to grow in that because of the zoning changes, and so we decided to put a packaging company in there because we were all required to use child resistant packaging. Everything was coming from California. There was no local source, and so we basically were first movers in Colorado for child resistant packaging. And we started a company called Dank Bottles, since we had Dank Dispensary. We went under an agreement with Kush Bottles out of Santa Ana, California, to use the name Kush Bottles Colorado, and we bought everything from them. They were already up and running and servicing California.
Right. So now you've hopped from touching the plant and business of cannabis to the ancillary business, the support business, the non-cannabis, the non-regulated.
The picks and shovels.
The picks and shovels side. Welcome. Welcome.
Yes. Well, you know, the gold miners made a lot of money, but, you know, Sears and Roebuck and those kind of guys were selling them clothes and shovels and picks. And
yeah, but we still say eureka when you're excited about striking something.
Yeah. Yes. So we started Dank Bottles, called it Kush Bottles, and that went just bananas right away because people either didn't have the space to stock enough. Like, a lot of these stores are tiny little stores, and they're going through so much product. They just didn't even physically have room to have cases of child resistant packaging sitting around. And you'd get screwed over on, you know, waiting for FedEx to deliver your stuff from LA or Southern California. So basically, you know, that company took off fast and furious, and
right when they were requiring regulations for packaging.
Totally. Right? And right as everything exploded, there. You know, and most businesses in Denver were going recreational were, you know, seeing like 1,000% increases in sales. So it was, things were ramping fast. And
so how much, did you tell me how much you sold on that first day, or you avoid that question?
First day, I think we sold $45,000 worth of weed that day.
Wow.
We could only get 500 people through the line. Like, if we had to do that today again, we're way faster and better, and we would have, you know, definitely probably cranked out, you know, we could crank out 700 or 800 people. No, and actually, this weekend is the
oh, we got Grant, what you want, A, B, or C.
Yeah. Well, and this weekend is fish weekend. And actually, we thought we would never, ever have a bigger day than that day one. But we've actually, we beat it on a 420 now. We've beat it on a Friday of fish weekend when they come to play Dick's Sporting Goods Park. It doesn't hurt when you get an extra 25, 30,000 hippie jam band stoner likes coming to Colorado to see
their
favorite
band.
It's
a conveniently located facility right yeah. near Dick's.
Pretty close. So, yeah, but Kush Bottles started going bananas, and we started meeting like Dank, everybody.
With a name like Dank, too, it's an easy Dank. Place to choose over others. Great branding. I see you're sporting the D.
This is the Contraband D. The city of Denver made us quit using this one because it looks a lot like theirs. So this is an illegal hat.
Wow, that's a pretty tight one, though. I never got one of those.
Well, you can't beat these grassroots hats. It's all hemp. Did I ever show you the inside?
No, I don't think I've ever seen one. These are specialty hats. They must not have passed the...
No, they were selling them. So I got pictures of the buds with the test results on the silk on the inside of the hat.
Shit. Look at you. He's got Sour Diesel, 24%. Death Star, 27%. Larry OG, 19%. So what do you feel about that these THC percentages? How do you feel when you smoke a 19% versus a 27%?
Oh, way better. 19% with lots of terps is the best weed. That's my opinion. But you know, that's why I don't get high off like the CO2 oil. All the terps are gone. All those other things are gone.
Secondary compounds are so important, man. Terpenes are so important.
So, my favorite ganj is is 18-19% OG strains that are just really terpy and gassy and, you know. Plus, you know, I mean, you talk about 19% versus 27%. That's one hit, two hits. I mean, it really, it's, you know, yeah, you want to have this super strong pot. But at the end of the day, I like to take more than one hit or two hits sometimes. And with the 29% stuff, I mean, you know, you can't smoke a joint.
Man, I don't see the difference so much. Right?
Yeah.
It's all about the... It's all about the secondary compounds. It's all about the terpenes.
So I'll throw this in there, too. It's all about the situation, too. Like how stoned you get.
CBD relation, the ratio as well.
Sure. Well, but I think, like for me, it's also like what you're doing and who you're hanging around with. It's a very social drug, you know. Sometimes if I'm by myself and I'm, you know, just maybe getting ready to go to bed or something, I'll smoke some pot and I don't really get that high. And I guess maybe at that point it's more of a medicinal thing. But when I'm hanging out with my friends or even, you know, us hanging out now, you know, it's like, it's a totally different vibe. And you know,
okay.
I think we're feeling good and stony.
So I think this C99 was 27.9%.
Yeah.
And we only smoked half a joint of it. You put it down.
I'm down.
You're down. Yep. Totally.
Well, you know, you can always relight.
Oh yeah, totally. We'll fire it up here in a minute. We'll just keep it going on. So, yeah. Kush bottles, man. You're slinging packaging because
slinging plastic, and you know that opened us up to getting to know everyone in the industry. All of a sudden, we, you know, we're delivering packaging to like 300 different companies, and then there was a big push for new labeling, and everybody freaked out. There's all this new labeling requirements. So we decided to help all of our customers. And we said, listen, if you're buying Kush bottles, we want to help you make sure that your labels are totally compliant. And people were struggling with that all over the place. And we were seeing that from our vendors at the dispensary and just looking at other people's packaging. And so we started teaching classes, free classes. Come over, send your manager over. We're going to send you home and you guys are going to be perfect at labeling.
Mm-hmm.
Which is important because if you mislabel cannabis and something bad happens, it's considered a violation affecting public safety.
You get a recall.
There's those sort of things. So
what happens if I buy some cannabis on Tuesday and on Wednesday it gets recalled? Can I come back into the store and say, hey, man?
Yes, you can. You know, they say the recalls always say, you know, to return it to where you bought it. Throw it away.
Right.
I don't think people return it.
By the time it comes out, everybody smoked it. It's usually 2 weeks after the public knows.
Yeah, totally, right. Totally. And, you know, there haven't been we've had pesticide recall issues, but, you know, for the most part, the big thing is that, you know, those public safety violations are, you know, could be $100,000 fines, and they can also get you closed. So All of a sudden, we're just helping everybody. We're helping people with labeling. Everyone's buying our packaging. And then that just kind of continued into our group being looked to all the time to help other people get compliant. I had a friend, and we started working with a company.
Denver Consulting Group.
Yeah, and you know, but I got to give it up to a company called iComply, which came in and we actually hired their company to train all of our staff at the dispensary. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they helped me as a licensee, you know, initiate a culture of compliance, which is what you have to have. Compliance trumps everything now in recreational and legalized cannabis. So, you know, I tell my clients in Oregon all the time right now, hey, the office trumps the field. Mm-hmm. And I know in growing cannabis, that's never been the case on the West Coast, you know.
Yeah, right, huh?
It's always been the growers do what they do, you know. And so we have a culture of compliance. So we started studying, we started being taught, and then we are out helping people, and we also knew all this compliance, and we were good at it. So Denver Consulting Group started kind of just because we were getting so busy helping other people. We said, we are going to go broke helping all these other people if we don't start a consulting company. And, you know, we could charge people a little bit, maybe get a couple employees. So Denver Consulting Group has now been writing license applications. We did Illinois and New York and Maryland and Hawaii. We've been helping a bunch of people for years now in Colorado. We just got our second client a license in Oregon, and that was last week. And then yesterday we successfully submitted a grower's license application for Alaska. So, and that's recreational. And now that I'm in the Northwest, I don't really have a lot going on in Washington, but boy, Oregon is an amazing spot for Denver Consulting Group. And actually, we call it DCG Northwest up there. We're kind of working on
it. You're all over the country. It's not just Oregon, though, because you're kind of skipping this crucial portion of it.
All right. Which one's right? that?
Well, you started the Denver Consulting Group, yep. and then you started helping people all over the country obtain legal licenses.
Yes.
So, yeah, and you've helped people in Illinois and New York.
You know, actually, my Maryland client was just texted me 5 minutes ago. They're in the middle of issuing all the licenses in Maryland. So Hawaii was very small. They only issued 8 licenses. This licensing thing it's kind of a tough thing because you can really do the best job and you can crush it for your client. And your client, you can really truly believe that your client's portfolio and resumes are really good. And it doesn't matter on whether, you know, you either get the license or you don't in these competitive, you know, arenas. And we wrote the second highest scoring GROW application in the state of Illinois, only to find out that we weren't getting that our group, the company, and we don't ever own any of this. So but I take it personally. So I say our group, they didn't get a license in their district. And the reason why is because the number one scoring application was also in that district. So had we written that in any of the other 19 districts, they would have gotten a license. So that's what I mean. You can kill it. You can do an amazing right. job and not get one of these competitive licenses. Mm-hmm. So it gets worse. New York, the group is amazing. We wrote the retail store part of the application. The processing and the growing was written by some other amazing guys. And they're only issuing 5 licenses for New York, right? Medical marijuana in New York. We wrote the highest merit-based scoring application. Oh, wait, there's some weird deal where they can subtract points off of your score because you don't own all the property. And all but one of the pieces of property were owned. That was in closing, under contract, the whole deal. Took a point deduction, and we were in 6th place by a 10th of a point. They took 5 licenses. So again, we wrote an amazing license. Everything was there,
right,
circumstance. Right. Now, writing license in Colorado, we know you're going to get the license. So, you know, it's more about helping people start their business. And, you know, same with what we're doing in Oregon. It's helping people. You know, I've got clients right now that we're starting with them with their business plan and writing a cannabis business plan and then moving them forward. But they're not in a competitive application situation. So, you know, when they have the piece of land and the right type of property that they're going to get a license. So, that's a lot more fun and a lot more, you know, for me, a little more fulfilling because we're going to keep working. We're building these relationships. It's going to be long term. And, so yeah, that's kind of where DCG is at now. We've got Puerto Rico clients we're taking on now, you know, Ohio and Pennsylvania just passed medical marijuana. So we've got clients, we're already working with from both of those. You know, we're in Alaska, we're in Washington, Oregon, California, then there was Hawaii, Maryland, New York, Illinois. So that's, we've been
11.
Yeah, we've been working in 11 states.
Plus Colorado, 12.
Yep, and Colorado, 12. It's been really good. We've had a lot of fun. We've met a ton of people. It's got its ups and downs, but at the end of the day, we've got the time to share our knowledge, and we've developed a lot of IP when it comes to writing standard operating procedures so that we can help people be compliant in their business. Like I said earlier, the office trumps the grow. Standard operating procedures are a way to make that not a big deal because everybody's on the same page. Everybody's doing exactly what you want them to do. It's repeatable. It's written down. And that's where we've gone now, which is a pretty high level of high business level. That's high functioning to be running a company off of a standard operating procedure. Most people don't have to do that.
Right, right, right. Most businesses don't use that.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
I have loose guidelines in all my businesses.
Right, yeah. Right?
Checklists, maybe, but not, you know. What would you akin it to? What other business has similar type of demands on their infrastructure?
Well, I mean, you know, I would say you've got a place, you know, there's oil and gas industry. It's got a lot of regulations. You know, there's, I think, you know, you look into, the old joke was like nuclear power, you know, nuclear is the only thing that's got more regulation than weed. And that's not totally true. What this guy.
Sounds real good, right. Sounds great.
I can't take credit for the quote, yeah. But I know I can't remember who it's one of the guys over at Dixie, but he always says, "Look, we're flying the airplane, and we're building it and repairing it all at the same time. We're up in the air doing all that. We're always in that phase or in some balance of those three things in the industry. And so you have to respect that and kind of be able to bend with it, with stress, and be able to move in the right directions, but not too stressed out. But
well, hey man, it's a perfect time to let's take a stressed out break. Real
take
dirt.
A break.
Chip Baker.
Justin Jones.
Real Dirt, rolling it up with Justin Jones from Dank.
Thanks for having me, Chip.
Yeah, man, it's a great conversation. So we've been smoking out, talking about Dank and Kush bottles. Kush bottles, now you're selling packaged, official packaged product that's a child-proof cannabis packaging. Yep. You're selling it in Colorado. You're selling it all over the country.
Yep.
And you decided to go public with this company.
Yep. Yes. Well, you know, what actually happened was the guys from California that we were working with came to us and wanted to go public. And so we thought that was pretty cool and decided to make it happen. So we merged all the companies together. There was an office in Washington that they had, and we basically sold them Dank bottles, and they spent about a year getting everything together to go public. And we didn't do a reverse merger, which has a lot of problems. So we've seen a lot of cannabis companies go public that way with a reverse merger. But this was something that we did from scratch, and I didn't participate that directly in it, so I can't take a lot of credit. But it was fun to watch them do it, and it's public, and you can buy stock now, and that's, you know, at 42 years old, I never thought I'd be part of a publicly traded company. And I currently don't have any actual, you know, affiliation, you know, as an employee or anything like that. I'm a stockholder in the company, and I'm always promoting it and sending my clients there, and their team is great. And we're really looking forward to California getting some regulations for child-resistant packaging and going recreational, because that's going to change the horizon immensely. So we're hoping for that here in the next couple of years. But yeah, Kush bottles.
So hugely successful Kush bottles. Denver Consulting Group is going on hand in hand at the time. You've also developed this CannaScore and this green space. Man, and how do we integrate this whole story?
Well, one thing about all these companies and what we did with all of them, it was out of necessity because there wasn't this long-standing infrastructure that we could lean on. Because it's cannabis, it's weed, it's just coming out of the closet. It's still, you know, illegal pretty much everywhere else. There's four states, you know, that allow rec, and Washington, D.C. But, you know, at the end of the day, people needed a way to buy buildings and own them for cash. Because if you were growing marijuana in a building that had a commercial bank loan on it, that wasn't going to happen. And people got their loans canceled, or people were getting kicked out of buildings. You know, so that's how Green Space got started. You know, at the same time, CannaScore, we wanted to be able to track our compliance. We wanted to be able to give ourselves audits. We wanted to be able to go deeper than just the rules and regulations and go to compliance 2.0, I call it. So CannaScore is a software that allows you to be able to do that, both through third-party auditing tools, and we're releasing a new in-house auditing tool that you can just use inside your company and basically give yourself the same checks that the state might when they come in to inspect you, or the city. You know, right now we are seeing about 10 different agencies in Colorado that are regulating us, inspecting us, coming out up once or twice a year. And so Canna Score allows you to, you know, kind of know that everything's tight. And so, you know, but there wasn't any product we could run out and buy. Like if you own a bar and you want to find out if your bartenders are making their drinks too strong or giving away beers, you know, you can do, there's like 20 different companies that with like 10 different solutions that'll come in. And, you know, we did it at a place I used to have where they'd come in and do all your inventory. And then you'd weigh the bottles at the end of the night, like just like on like a pot scale, you throw a fifth of Jack up there and they could tell you down like to the fraction of an ounce exactly how much it was leaving the bottle, you know, but that doesn't exist in cannabis. And so that's why we started Canna Score, and that's why we started Green Space. And so now Green Space has got a really nice portfolio in Portland. That's a big group of a bunch of people that invest on commercial property and rent it directly to cannabis companies, right, grower, so, processors, stores.
So you are a one-stop shop of cannabis right now.
It's coming that way. I mean, there's a few things.
So you're on both sides of the business. You're on the ancillary side. You're also on the direct plant side. You grow the cannabis and then sell it by the gram out the front door of your facility.
Yep.
Right. So you're also a consultant helping new cannabis people and people already in the cannabis industry put their business together in a sophisticated and regulated manner.
Yep.
Right. You have a software company associated with this called Green Space.
No, Canna Score.
Canna Score.
Yep.
So that can help you monitor all of your regulatory issues within your business.
And we also use that as on your application for a marijuana license, you say, listen, we're going to use Canna Score. We're going to know that all of our compliance is perfect.
So then you also have Green Space that buys and leases commercial cannabis spaces to cannabis people.
Yep.
Right. So
yes.
What else? I mean, I guess there's other stuff to do, but
yeah.
I mean, you seem like you're on all sides of it right now. I mean,
well,
you
and
grow
if I'm
more
not,
weed,
you yeah. Could, if I'm not doing it, I know someone that is, you know, so like, I, you know, knowing someone like you and your team, you know, that's a big asset for me because, you know, I'm not making dirt or, you know, selling the lights and, you know, dealing with that type of distribution and sales. So and we just send them your way. And I just had a client of mine in Oregon buy, I think, about 30 of your DEs over there at Cultivate. And so you know, when I don't have exact, when I don't, you know, if I can't do it or one of my companies can't do it, then I've got some close friends that we send people over to.
No, that's what I meant about your networking. You got the guy. I've called you over the years asking you for connections of people or whatnot. That's for sure.
Yep. But the one-stop shop, it's been fun. And I think that...
This didn't start out that way, though. You didn't have this idea.
Well, we never did try to do any of it. The beginning of our story today was the jam pad, the man hang. I didn't ever say, we were trying to start a commercial marijuana grow.
You were just trying to grow some weed to pay for it.
Yeah, we weren't trying to open a marijuana store. We're just trying to get that out, get these little grows out of our basement. But, you know... It's also about identifying when a good thing's, you know, in front of you and then working hard and going for it and making good decisions, not getting greedy, bootstrapping, you know, don't go out. And, you know, some people like to use other people's money and that does work out. So I'm sure a lot of the times, but we were fortunate enough to really just put it all back in, you know, put it as much as we could until we got to a place where, you know, there was extra. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, man. So, hey, man, what's some of the like slang language or terminology you guys use? You know, like words that have come into the cannabis industry, whether it's in the consulting, the packaging, the growing, the distribution, the sales.
Well, I have some of my own that I always try to get rolling and it works.
Yeah.
And so like slang, it'll be, and some of it's low temp dabs, brah. Like I say that to people sometimes.
Low temp dabs, brah. Right, right.
Like we won't be doing dabs, or maybe we'll be at an event or
something. It just defines
something
quality.
Yeah. But you know, so then like I have some friends that
are you making fun of people I know or?
Well, I would say it pokes fun at the dab industry somewhat, but you know, there's just a younger generation. I'm getting older. I'm just kind of poking fun at these younger kids. I mean, we were doing dabs with, you know, our knives and gas stoves and 70 micron bubble hash, you know, the full melt.
Right.
But other slang.
Full, low temp dabs, bro. I've actually heard other people say it that way, too. Yeah.
Well, there's a big movement for low temp dabs, brah.
Oh, yeah, man. It's all about the terp, brah.
But
it's for real. It really is all about the terp.
Well, you know, dank is a name that we took and actually
sure, that's a slang. It's totally slang.
And it's been super hard to trademark or copyright or do anything with because it's such a
general term.
Yeah,
huh?
it's just so much of a word. It can mean the smell of your basement, you know, or you know,
nothing special. You haven't defined anything special,
right,
with dank.
We were able to get like trademark type of stuff on our logos. Yeah. So you trademark your logo, you trademark your logo on a shirt, on a glass, on a mug or whatever. And you know, that's cool. But, back in the day people used to give me shit and they would say, you know, oh, what kind of a name is dank, you know, for medical marijuana, you know? And I would say, it's going to be a really good name someday for recreational marijuana. And, you know, so when rec happened, we were glad to already have the name and have it been around a little bit. And
one of my favorite phrases is, that's just dank.
Yeah, that's the dank. But it was, you know.
Slang.
The old slang, okay, so like, you know, back in the day growing up in the Midwest, you know, we called it KB, the kind bud, got the kind.
Historic slang.
Yeah, that's all pretty standard, I think.
Yeah, now
that's
standard, absolutely.
You had the swag. We had, you know, there was always dirt weed, brick weed, shitty weed, dog roll.
Dog roll. I don't think I'm familiar with a dog roll. What's that?
That's just shitty Mexican brick weed that just sucks. But when you live in Iowa and you're like, you know, 19
gay man,
or 20,
you smoke
man,
what you get, right?
Yeah. But I'm trying to think of some other good slang.
What strains are you smoking these days?
Well, a friend of mine does this amazing Skywalker OG cut.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty up in Portland. So, you know, I've left Denver right now. And so in my own grow, I've had my own grow for 8 years.
So now you're buying West Coast weed.
So now I'm buying West Coast weed, and it's fun. I get to hit all these different dispensaries, and I've, you know, you're out there checking it out. But, you know, I've got this bro that does some Skywalker, and he'll kick me down that a little bit sometimes. And, man, that stuff's good. And then, but I think that's like that 19, 20% terped out OG cut, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's what I love. That Gorilla Glue, I got some OGHB, which I don't remember what the HB, but I've seen it a couple times.
Headband?
No, sorry. OGKB.
Mm.
I like to go over to Archive Portland. You know, they got a Gorilla Glue there and a couple other things that I really dig.
This show is not sponsored by Archive Portland as of this recording.
I know. We've talked about them a couple times, but
they're just good people. They got good weed. I've known Fletcher for years.
Totally.
Yeah, he's a great guy. High standards.
Yeah. There's a dog walker cut rolling around
Albert,
up there.
Albert Walker dog.
Yeah. Is it a Kim dog, Albert Walker?
I'm not sure.
Well, Albert Walker was a really finicky plant to grow.
God, man, it has this incredible smell while it's growing like nothing else.
Yeah.
And when you harvest it, it completely changes. Fletcher does a great job of that shit. I should take a weed vacay to Portland.
You should. Yeah, I don't know where I get this the dog walker I've gotten at this other spot. You know, the Oregon scene's gonna go, you know, through a lot here between now and the end of the year with their regulations, and the growers are changing and moving out of their basements and out of their garages and moving into warehouses. But they've had an amazing farm culture there for so long.
Yeah,
bunch of outdoor guys in Southern Oregon.
Yeah, you're getting to see it all, man, right now.
Yeah,
everybody's just like really like coming out of the closet, so to speak.
Yep.
Right?
Definitely.
Right? The big growers have gotten bigger.
Well, Oregon's in a cool spot because, you know, they've watched Washington. you know, who went 6 months after Colorado. And so they're over, Washington's over 2 years now with the full program for recreational. And so, and they really modeled themselves off of Colorado. They didn't do a couple things that were probably, that were good decisions. That's a good decision. And then they avoided a lot of what, you know, Washington had went through. So, and what Washington was doing. So, you know, I've got some friends that just moved up, a friend who just moved up to Washington, and he's a cool cat, you know, up there. And there's a different, you know, the regulations there are a little bit different. They got, but I, you know, I like going to the stores in Washington. They got tons of strains. Like the Washington stores will have like 200 strains because there's no vertical integration at all. So yeah, they just,
tons of growers.
They just, there's tons of growers. Everything's branded to the grow. Everything's branded back to the farm. The stores are really like a liquor store. You just have to carry everything, you know? So, but that's kind of cool too, as a shopper, you know, as a, as a, you know, as a stoner.
What's a good shop up there?
Oh man, it's been a while since I've been up in Washington. It was called, I went around one day to like seven shops with the guy who sells them all their point of sales. So he likes to roll around to stop in and talk to the manager and just get some feedback on the point of sale system unannounced. And so he took me to a bunch of stores. I'll have to think of one. I'm drawing a blank. I'm drawing a C99 blank. Yeah, totally. But I'll tell you
I'll just have to go up there and find out.
You have to just come up there.
Fletcher knows the people up there. I should just go check it out.
Yeah. And there's a, and really, the concentrate scene in Oregon at the stores is very limited because you can only, it just started. They just were started allowing concentrate and topical and edible sales in Oregon for recreational in June. So, and there's other restrictions that get lifted at the end of the year. So, yeah, Oregon's going to keep getting better and be a cool scene. And, you know, we're getting our DCG Northwest up there. Canascore will be launching up there soon. We've, bought 8 buildings with green space up there. We've been helping some Colorado guys go to Oregon. So some of our, tenants at the buildings up there are, Colorado guys that are making a move to Oregon, expanding. Oregon allows out-of-state ownership and immediate residency when you get there. They changed those laws this last year. So that opened things up, opened some money, streams up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Wow, yeah. So, man, how would you define yourself? A grower, a dealer, or a smoker? It's okay, man.
It's been a couple of years since I was, you know, getting down and dirty in the grow. So I'll take that one off. I know how to grow, and if I had to jump in there, everything would be all right. But I haven't done it hands on. Dealer, you know, I haven't personally sold any weed for a while either. We got such a great team at Dank.
You know, the dealer kind of represents the business side.
Well, sure. Well, I mean, in that respect, I am equal parts grower, dealer, smoker, for sure. But you know what I think about? What I think is more important is that I love the plant, cannabis plant. I'm definitely in love with Mary Jane.
I love you, Mary Jane.
I tried to name my youngest daughter Mary Jane.
Oh, and yeah.
I had it. This is a funny story. My grandmother's name is Mary Jane. And I was trying to pull it off. Like, I want to name her after my grandma, you know.
I know.
But no, equal parts. But what it's really about is the love of the plant. And if you love the plant and you take care of the plant, everything else works out.
So you're a smoker. You think you're a smoker?
All right. There you go.
Well, you know, I pegged you for a dealer. I haven't had anyone say they were a dealer yet. Most people say they're smokers or growers.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't think there's anything bad with a dealer. I think there's a little dealer in all of us. Right.
But well, you've had to. I mean, well, you know, before you could just get weed at a store, whether you had a medical card or, or now with rec, I mean, you had to. I don't know. I think, actually, I do know guys that probably never sold weed. Maybe they would get like an extra eighth for their buddy, because otherwise their buddy would just come over and smoke all their weed, right? So, you know, it's okay to be a dealer. Somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do it. I've always loved my dealer.
I got a corner, man.
I've always loved my dealer.
I got a corner.
Yeah, I love you guys, man.
Elm Street, man.
Just right down the street.
I got a corner.
Elm Street.
I yelled that at a guy one time. He was trying to sell weed. He was sitting in front of my store.
This is my corner.
In front of my store, and when people walked up to go in our store, he would say, "Hey, I got better weed, and it's cheaper, right?" And then, and most people would kind of look, and but like probably like one out of 20 people would walk over and talk to the guy. I ran out a couple different times, and I said, "This is my block. Go down to the next block, buddy." Or I'll call the cops. That's the funniest part. I went out and I said, "This is my block. You get out, you hit the road, or I'm calling the cops." Because you're infringing on my space. This is where I sell weed.
Wow, that's such a polite interaction.
But, I, you know, up until just about, really up until 2.5 years ago, I was really hands-on with everything at the store and the grow. And now you've been
in Oregon for a while.
5 months.
Excellent, man. That you're liking the West Coast lifestyle. The
West Coast is nice.
Mm-hmm.
There's
good business out there for you. You get to position yourself in Washington, Oregon, and California.
And Alaska's not too far away, so I'm looking forward to getting up there. We've got a client up there, and we got an application submitted for him. And, you know, when you talk about marijuana, a lot of other things, there's this culture. We've had this underground culture for so long, and now that everyone's coming out of the closet and it's okay to, you know, to smoke pot and it's legal in so many places, like the music and the different scenes, you know, like watching like the hip hop culture or the hippie culture and like the jam band, you know, scene. But marijuana like brings it all together, like crosses over from all these like things for music or really even people, you know. It brings Republicans and Democrats, you know, everybody, you know, once you realize that you're stoners, and just maybe someone new that you meet's a stoner also, you're like, you know, you're joined.
Right, you have a bond.
But we're going to lose some of that with all the rec, with all the legalization. And that's okay, too, because you don't have that bond. You don't have to score weed anymore. And that's part of that bond, is that score, the score, right? Because, you know, it's illegal. You could get in trouble, you know, get a little rush out of that. Now you just buy weed.
Yeah, I know. It's totally different.
And people you talk about grams, you know, and eighths, we haven't weighed a quarter out in 2.5 years. If you want a quarter, we'll give you 2/8. I mean, you know, but we don't even package quarters.
Right. A lot of people go that way. 16
and joints. I think we sell thousands of joints. And so
you guys have an automated joint roller or hand package?
No, we did finally get an automated joint roller. Someone finally made one that was
worked.
It was good, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you identify a major struggle that you have that's a universal, or maybe that's like the greatest struggle you had to overcome to get into this business or to maintain in this business?
Well, there's always adversity, and something's always coming at you. We've been lucky a lot, and we have the right team and the right, you know, people around us. So when something happens, you know, we're okay with it. You know, you get audited for your taxes, you know. I mean, you know, that's something that I never thought I'd have to do with weed, you know, is like go through a tax audit for cannabis. And we've had the state, and now we have the IRS. And in 2 weeks, we got the city. So by the end of this year, I'll have gone through all of it. And, you know, those are stressful things, but, you know,
just hoops to jump through, really.
It's hoops, and you know, it costs money, and you got to spend the money, get the right people, you know, hire the good attorneys for that sort of thing. You know, we've been blessed. We've really been blessed. We haven't had a ton of bad things happen. You know, like we got broken into, you know, and like they just, they just opened the wrong door, right? Like if they would have opened the next door, you know, like there's three doors. What was that show where there's like three doors?
Right.
And there was like one of the doors had something really good. The other door was like, you know, not really that good. And then the other door was a joke, right? Like you lose. So, you know, I mean, we've been lucky when something bad happens, they don't open the right door. but you know, that's the way it is with cannabis. It's happening so fast. And going back to that, the analogy of flying the plane as you build it and fix it, you know, it's there's always going to be something. And we have people that hate what we're doing. Smart Colorado is a group that's got millions and millions of dollars.
Absolutely. They're fighting it.
And the governor listens to them. I was on a committee that hired.
You have to.
And they're on the committees. I sat on the committee to hire the new director of marijuana. We interviewed five different candidates, and you know, I was there with guys from, you know, well, with people from Smart Colorado and people from the state and different cities in Colorado.
And they're trying to leverage anti-cannabis people onto the enforcement issues.
Well, you have to. They've got a lot of money, and people listen to them, and they mm-hmm. there are, you know, they do have a side, but. So, you know, there's always that.
I'm not going to give them their side on this show. We won't invite
them. No, we're not going to. But we do fight that in cannabis now, and that's why mm-hmm. The government relations, you know, comes into play. And I've done some work with the Colorado Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, and that's, you know, we've worked some of the bills that we've sponsored and helped get through. Now, the big bill we worked on this year was to get out-of-state investments and ownership allowed here in Colorado. So that starts the beginning of the year. So that was big. And it's a real industry, just like anything else. Yep. It's got everything.
It's all just starting and just happening.
Yep.
Yeah. It's all happening, man. If you had a crystal ball and you're looking into your crystal ball.
Yep.
What happens 5 years from now?
I was reading this morning and I got up that there's nine initiatives in November.
Yeah.
Nine. So
I see it too.
California, man. Arizona. Who else was doing something? Massachusetts and Maine. So anyways, you know, California is a big catalyst. So if California votes in recreational cannabis this year in November, I think it's polling pretty good. Of course, we're here in the beginning of September. It will, that's going to change things, and it's going to make Washington, D.C. really have to take a look at what they're doing when the entire West Coast of the United States is recreational. I mean, even Alaska, I mean, everything on the West. It's a lot of people. California's huge. It's a massive representation of the United States and the kind of, you know, so 5 years, I think that you'll be able to do this with the blessing of the feds in your state if you want to. And if you want to keep the war on weed going on in your state somewhere, I think they'll help you with that too. So I think that the way they deregulate or the way they unschedule cannabis will have a lot to do with that. And as long as the states that really want to do it are allowed to continue to do it and are treated like more normal businesses or businesses that could be similar in nature, that's good. And I think in 5 years, we'll have made a lot of progress towards that. And I think in 10 years, it could be different, and we could be shipping from state to state. In 5 years, we could be shipping state to state on the West Coast. And then that changes things too. You know, all these years, all that great product from Northern California that makes its way around. You know, I mean, if they could actually distribute that all up and down the West Coast, you know, without leaving into any other states that are
game changer.
And it'll be hard, I think, to get states like Idaho and Utah to pass. So it'll be hard to get some like interstate commerce going because of the routes. But I think that the West Coast going, you know, that's going to be real. And that could be 5 years that they could be working together.
Right.
Some crossover. So
awesome predictions. Well, I'll check back in 5 years and we'll see how that rolls for us.
Yep.
Sweet, man. Well, this has been an awesome conversation. I'm glad you squeezed me into you. I know your difficult schedule. First thing in the morning, all these joints made it an epic conversation.
It is epic. I got to pull it together now and and do some meetings and talk to some people about starting their weed business.
Awesome day,
and,
man.
No, but yeah, thanks for having me, Chip, and it's always fun hanging out and talking about
shop.
The dirt.
Yeah, getting the real dirt.
The real dirt.
All right, this is the real dirt. Chip Baker and Justin Jones. Let's go roll some more of that good kush I got over here up.
All right.
We have reached the end of another episode of The Real Dirt. Thank you, Denver Consulting, Bickle Consulting, Cultivate Colorado, Archive Seed Bank, Lisa, Willow, David, Chris, Michael, Hollis. Keep it dirty, my friends.